You're listening to a podcast from the Journal of the American Association of Nurse Practitioners. I'm Kim Curry, Editor-in-Chief of the Journal. Welcome to Here's the Issue, featuring our April 2022 issue of the Journal. And today we have a special guest for our podcast, Dr. Leonie DeClercq, and she's going to talk about a study that she did that is a feature in the Journal this month, and it's called Why Don't All Nurse Practitioners Precept? A Comparative Study. Welcome, Leonie.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Now, I know that you co-authored this study with Leanne Leffler, Corey Nagel, Anita Mitchell, Martha Rojo, and Kathleen Sparbell were your co-authors on this. And this was actually your dissertation study, wasn't it?
It was. This study is the reason I went into a PhD program.
That's fantastic. Well, I can't wait to hear about it. And I'm just going to kind of summarize the abstract for our listeners, and then we'll chat a little bit about the study. The background of your study was that preceptors are integral in nurse practitioner education, but a shortage of willing preceptors limits graduations from our nurse practitioner programs. But we don't know very much about why nurse practitioners decide not to precept. So your purpose was to identify factors that are significantly associated with nurse practitioner status as currently, previously, or never precepting. And to do that, you use the integrated behavioral model as the conceptual framework. Your methodology was a cross-sectional comparative descriptive study of nurse practitioners, and you used a survey to do that. You based that on published surveys, and you kind of added and adapted items to reflect your framework. And there were subscales, and those included personal factors, primary determinants of intent to precept, and external factors. And you mailed recruitment postcards and did an online survey link, and you used for your subjects all nurse practitioners in your state of Arkansas, because you're a faculty member at the University of Arkansas. And the data were analyzed using bivariate and stepwise multinomial logistic regression for each subscale. The results were you got 261 responses, which is great. The participants who had previously or never precepted differed from current preceptors on multiple variables on the bivariate analysis. Predictive personal factors included experience and hours worked per week. Predictive primary determinants included knowing nurse practitioners that precept, support for precepting, recognition of preceptors, and clinical expertise. And the predictive external factors included space, liability, having a gatekeeper, the NP program itself, the importance of precepting, and the number of requests. So the conclusions were that different factors predict nurse practitioners who currently, previously, and have never precepted. However, frequency of requests predicted both non-precepting groups, the group who previously precepted and the group who never precepted. And various supports in the clinical setting and program factors predicted one or the other of the non-precepting groups. Implications that you found were that we need to have strategies. We need to develop strategies to ensure all potential preceptors are recruited, and we need to have increased support for precepting and to ensure that educational programs meet preceptors' needs. Makes perfect sense to me and a lot of my colleagues, I'm sure, right? So this is great stuff, and we certainly need more studies of this type. So I'm really interested in hearing about why you got inspired to do this study. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so as a faculty member, I've been working with preceptors for the last 13 years, and it is becoming more and more difficult to obtain preceptors, and preceptors are valuable. They are the only thing that really lets our students be able to apply what they're learning in class in that clinical setting. As we are having more nurse practitioner programs, and we need more nurse practitioner programs because we need more nurse practitioners to solve the healthcare provider shortage, but as we have more programs, it seems to be getting more and more difficult to find nurse practitioners that are willing to precept. So when I looked at the literature, what I found was that most of the studies had been done with nurse practitioners that precepted, or if they did include nurse practitioners that didn't precept, they didn't evaluate them differently. So we really didn't know why nurse practitioners were deciding not to precept. So that was the incentive for doing this particular study.
Yeah, that's a good point you're making, that you want to focus on the people who are saying no, so you can see if you can turn some of those no's into yeses. Great, great point. Yeah. So tell me more about how you located your participants for the study.
So locating the participants was really pretty easy. I just purchased the APRN roster from our Board of Nursing that has mailing addresses, and I was fortunate to have funding from two organizations that enabled me to be able to send postcards to all of the nurse practitioners who had been in practice for at least 15 for at least 15 months, which would mean that they should be eligible to precept. So I sent postcards to all 2,500 plus nurse practitioners. I sent second postcards out about 3 weeks later. And then I also sent out an email blast through the Arkansas Nurse Practitioner Association. So I felt that I had a pretty good opportunity to reach all of the nurse practitioners in the state. I got about 10% of the eligible nurse practitioners that actually responded. I think part of the reason that my responses were lower than I expected was I did this right at the beginning of COVID. And in Arkansas, as in many other states, that was not a good time for nurse practitioners. We had a lot that were laid off. We had a lot of instability in our practice environment at the beginning of COVID. And I don't think nurse practitioners wanted to add one more thing to their list of to-dos.
So true. And I can't tell you how many things we've received here at the Journal and papers that we've received and studies we've received that were hugely impacted by COVID. So much, virtually all medical research, I think, done during that time, there was an impact. But still, to me, a 10% response rate to a survey methodology is not bad. Before I ask you more about specific questions, could you talk to us just for a minute or so about the integrated behavioral model and tell us a little bit more about that?
Okay. So the integrated behavioral model is actually a health promotion model that was developed in the 1990s. It was originally used looking at health promoting behaviors in prevention of HIV, but it is a behavioral model and it has been used to predict other kinds of behaviors. Basically, the integrated behavioral model states that personal factors create underlying beliefs that lead to primary determinants of behavioral intent, which are attitude towards the behavior, perceived norm of the behavior, and personal agency, which is self-efficacy and behavioral control. But even if the person intends to perform a behavior, external factors such as the importance of the behavior, environmental constraints, and having the necessary knowledge and skills can actually affect whether one actually performs the behavior.
That sounds like a classic behavioral theory. I think we should all be using those more when we're investigating why people do and don't do certain things. So it makes perfect sense. Can you tell us a little bit about the specific questions that you asked of the subjects and what you wanted them to respond to very specifically?
The personal factors that I asked about included things like age, race, gender identification, professional experience, overall professional satisfaction, personality, and the risk for professional distress. There were six statements that evaluated attitude, which they rated from disagree strongly to agree strongly. Those statements included things such as precepting is satisfying, precepting is draining, precepting helps nurse practitioners advance professionally. I had 11 statements that evaluated perceived norms of precepting, such as my collaborating physician is supportive of precepting, my patients are receptive to students, preceptors are not appreciated, most nurse practitioners I know precept, and precepting is an expectation of my employment. And then I also had six statements that evaluated personal agency, and they included things such as I have sufficient clinical expertise to precept, I'm confident in my ability to precept, and I can easily overcome barriers to precepting. As far as external factors, I evaluated salience or importance by agreement to the statement that it's important that I precept. I also looked at the importance of and influences of common incentives that are provided by schools of nursing and also financial incentives. I evaluated the influence of program factors such as clear responsibilities, communication, and availability of faculty. And then the environmental constraints that I evaluated included things such as having sufficient time to provide patient care and carry out other duties as a preceptor, ability to meet productivity requirements, not having sufficient space in the clinical setting for students, suitability of the practice for student learning, perceived workload, ever having received training as a preceptor, frequency of requests to precept, and who controlled the decision whether or not to precept, whether it was the nurse practitioner or someone else in the clinical setting that I referred to as a gatekeeper.
Wow, that sounds like you are really trying to thoroughly evaluate a variety of factors that could influence them in choosing whether or not to precept. And remind me before we go on, is this, I know this, it's an adapted instrument. You mentioned it was based on some other surveys and then you adapted it to fit your model that you were working with. In terms of validity and reliability testing, how did you go about that for this study?
So I piloted it with six faculty members who were advanced practice nurses. We also looked at it in reference to the current literature. So I had a literature search that had something around 60 different studies. And then afterwards, I checked reliability, looking at internal consistency, and I had a good alpha. I can't tell you exactly what it is right now, though.
Talk to us a little bit about your data analysis, because I know that what you were trying to do was kind of tease out for these individual factors, and there are multiple factors, the effect that each one had on the decision-making by the nurse practitioner. So just talk to us about the data analysis plan a little bit.
Yeah, so I used multinomial logistic regression because I basically had three different groups that I was trying to find predictives for. And that was the currently precepting, previously precepting, and never precepting groups. And I was looking for difference between the two non-precepting groups and the current preceptor group. So in everything I did, the current preceptors were used as the reference group. So I used bivariate analysis to evaluate the different variables individually. And the main reason I did that was because I knew that the readers would be interested in that, because that would be what I was most interested in as a reader. But then I also created models that actually predicted the membership in the different groups compared to the currently precepting group, using the stepwise multinomial logistic regression. And those models controlled for other variables in the model, but I didn't have enough participants to put everything in there. So I had to divide it by my three subscales of my survey.
All right. So I know you collected a lot of factors from the nurse practitioners, and as subjects, how long did you estimate it would take each of them to complete the survey?
So the survey was about 93 questions, but it really didn't take more than about 10 minutes to complete. I tried to compensate my participants by offering them an opportunity to get a $10 gift card. About half of them took me up on that. And I know that was just nominal, but I appreciated them participating.
Right. So really, they just kind of had to check it off on a scale, what they scored on each of those questions that you were asking. And therefore, even though it was a lengthy survey, the amount of time invested was much less than had there been some open-ended questions or something like that.
Yeah, and there were actually three open-ended questions, but even with those, it wasn't going to be an extremely long survey.
We want to talk about the various factors that predicted whether or not a nurse practitioner would serve as a preceptor. And I wanted to start by picking out those nurse practitioners who did serve as a preceptor and what sort of factors you found that contributed to them deciding that they would be willing to be a preceptor.
That's a good question, and that's not actually the way that I did my analysis.
Okay.
So my analysis was looking at why people didn't precept. And so by using the current precept as the comparator, I actually got more data on why people were previously preceptors and why people had never precepted.
So you had three groups, people who were current preceptors, people who previously did, and people who never did. And the focus really was strictly on the people who were previous and never. So we want to look at, were there any differences between the people who had in the past and then stopped and the people who had never started?
You know, when I did the bivariate, just looking at individual factors, there were several variables that differed between groups, but I think it was more interesting when I set up these models. Mm-hmm. So for both non-precepting groups, I found that fewer requests to precept predicted membership in both of those groups. So current preceptors had more requests to precept than either never preceptors or people that had previously precepted. I also found that knowing fewer nurse practitioners that precepted was a predictor of being in the never precepting group and also almost reached statistical significance for being in the previously precepted group. And I think if I'd had more participants in that group, I would probably have met statistical significance.
Yeah. And one of the interesting things I heard you say there is kind of to give the school some information, the more you ask, the more likely someone will say yes. So the lesson there is keep asking, even if they haven't precepted, because you're specifically saying that the more requests somebody got, the more likely they were to be a preceptor.
Yeah. And I've actually done some qualitative studies around this. I did a pilot before I did this. And of the small number of people that I talked with, the main reason that they weren't precepting was because no one had asked them.
So we all think that we're out there just beating the bushes and finding every possible preceptor, and we're not. That's the lesson learned.
Yeah. So, you know, that is one of my key takeaways. We need to reach everybody.
Good point. So what are some things that, going to the other end, that employers can do? Because you mentioned there were factors about the work setting that might also lead someone to kind of think, well, I really can't precept. What can employers do better to support NPs being preceptors? Because there's something in it for the employer. They're going to get more nurse practitioners applying if they expose them to the setting, if they bring them in and welcome them and that kind of thing. So what's the takeaway for employers?
So there's a couple of things that I found. Now, one thing that I found was that having sufficient time to precept was not a predictor of being in either any of those groups. They were the same across, but that was also in the writing questions, the main barrier to being able to precept. So I think that one thing that employers can do is try to add some flexibility to schedule when those practitioners are precepting so that they are able to adjust that time. And, you know, that seems to be something that's important in all of the writing questions. The other thing that I noticed was this discrepancy between nurse practitioner and employer's perceptions of the obligation to precept. So for my nurse practitioners, the mean rating for agreement that precepting is a professional obligation was about 5 out of 7 or moderate agreement, whereas their agreement that precepting was an expectation of their employment or that it was considered on their annual review was like 2 out of 7, so moderate disagreement. So I think if we could get employers to actually consider that precepting is an important part of a nurse practitioner's responsibility and not just something that needs to be added on, that that would go a long way to supporting our nurse practitioners so that they can precept and not feel so stressed about it.
Great, thank you. And do you have any other recommendations for schools of nursing besides making sure you're actually finding people?
So yeah, finding a way to find the preceptors is an important one. But the other thing that they need to be aware of is that, you know, there were definitely comments on communication and knowing what the programs expected as a preceptor and having faculty that are available to the preceptors and how those were important to all of my nurse practitioners. And another thing that came up in the open response items was inconsistent preparation of students. So it's important that students are well prepared to enter into that clinical setting with where they're comfortable with the basic skills that are going to be required of them, such as how to take a history and physical exam, how to create a differential diagnosis, and then how to manage some of the common conditions that they're going to meet.
Right. So making sure your students are prepared to go out and be precepted and not be overly burdensome to a preceptor. Right.
Yeah. And that's also going to help the preceptors with their time, because it takes time to teach students what you would expect they would already know when they enter that setting.
Certainly. Yeah. Well, that's great. This is all such useful information. Are there any other comments you'd like to make?
No, I just want to say that it's really important to have preceptors. And I think that, you know, personally, I appreciate every nurse practitioner that precepts, and I hope that the study will help to find ways to make more willing.
Thank you very much. Well, this has been great. I hope everyone enjoys this issue of the journal, and thanks to all of our listeners, and be sure and look for more podcasts from the Journal of the American Association of Nurse Practitioners. Thank you.